It's for pop parade, is it?
Yeah.
My name's David Bowie, and a very warm welcome to Pop Parade.
Tijdens een bezoek aan Nederland hadden we een exclusief interview met David Bowie.
Eno and I got the right sort of feeling on the Low album. And we thought we'd continue in the same place, as this is part of a sort of a trilogy of albums.
Mm-hmm. What's special about that Hansa at the Wall studio, or is it?
It's about 30 or 40 meters away from the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a turret on top. And so you record looking at the turret, and it provides a good friction for recording. Kind of friction that I need. It's not a comfortable place to record.
No, I wouldn't say so.
So that's the reason.
It's like, makes me feel like they would make you feel cold instead of...
No, not cold. You feel overprotective. You feel very...
You're on the right side of the wall.
It still comes in. You feel it coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And so that you develop very strong empathies with the people that you're working with, sort of out of protection.
Yeah.
A security blanket thing, yeah.
Berlin still have a little of the atmosphere that I associate you with, like the decadent 30s.
Oh, Lord, no,
it's nothing
no.
like that?
No, it's a very serious city.
Mm-hmm.
Incredibly serious.
2 years ago you said you were going to stop with all this rock business.
Yeah.
Now, where are we today?
I think I'm certainly no longer part of the... rock trappings. The way that I live is not very rock and roll. So I've divorced myself from that physical side of it. The nearest I get to it is in records, I think.
Mm-hmm. You're not performing anymore?
Yes, I'm going to do a tour next year. Mm-hmm. I want to do a tour very much. I want to tour Low and Heroes.
Right. You hear yourself?
No. I'm demythed.
But we're happy, but that, to a lot of people, you're a hero, right?
Oh, that shouldn't be the case at all.
Isn't it strange to be in that? You don't want to be that, but people force you into that.
No, I don't find that at all, because the areas that I live in, nobody knows me anyway.
Right.
So it's not a problem of mine.
Vervolgens vroegen we Bowie naar de betekenis van de song Heroes.
The idea of the song is a story attached to it. Watching the wall every day about 12 o'clock midday to about 1 o'clock, obviously during the lunch break, a boy and a girl would meet under the wall, under the guard, under the gun, on a park bench, little bench, which is by the wall, and they would meet there, eat their sandwiches and kiss and cuddle and whatever. They were carrying on some kind of affair. And this went on through the whole recording, every day. And it struck me as ironic that of all the hundreds of places they could have met in West Berlin, they met under the wall. So I presume that they felt a little guilty about their affair and were subconsciously drawn there through, and it was sort of having this illicit thing going. And I guess that they gave their affair credibility by regarding it as an act of heroism. So the song sort of evolved out of that. Sorry, what you were saying?
I was saying...
All right, Mom.
Right, there we are. I was saying, as soon as you're out of that protected area, you're a hero. I mean, the kids waiting
outside. Come in!
Outside the studio. Come in.
We're not doing anything important.
Just an interview.
I thought you'd never stop blowing that horn.
Another glass of milk.
Oh, that's what, you forgot your car keys.
Another glass of milk. Okay, now, what I wanted to say, as soon as you're outside of the protected area...
Yeah, I got the question.
You're a hero, you're a hero if you want to be or not, right?
Well, there's only a couple of places that sort of gets to be superficially a problem, and that's sort of Los Angeles and not so much New York. And London is quite difficult to sort of move around, and during the daytime.
Well, that power that gives you, isn't that frightening to you?
I don't know. As I say, I haven't been in that environment for about a year and a half, 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't affect me. I live in a very different way. I mean, I move this year. I've moved on from Japan through Hong Kong, Thailand, back to Germany. Up to Switzerland.
You live in one specific place?
No, I have nowhere.
Right. Okay. Anything special to say about the number of heroes for the rest? I mean, is it a hero for a day?
It's a very pretty love song.
Okay. That's interview number one.
You said Heroes is a pretty love song.
Yeah.
It says, we could be a hero for one day.
Yes.
We could be heroes for one day.
Yeah.
Do you want people to feel like that just for one day? You said you don't feel yourself a hero.
No.
People make you a hero.
No, they don't.
For them?
No, they don't.
They
don't make me a hero. I know I'm not a hero.
What is the power of still going on?
Isn't
doing it. Doing.
Nope.
Making records, selling.
Yeah. That's work.
Just work.
Yeah. Work and a way of life for me.
Mm-hmm. In an interview a long time ago, you said, I could be a Hitler in England. I could make this country very big if I want to.
I don't think I said I would make this country very big.
Let me see what you said. Could have been a hero. That could make this country a great country.
Oh, I don't know where you read that, but that's not true.
Rolling Stone interview.
No, but that's not true.
It's a translation.
I have the feeling that, I mean, we get all the press information about you. That's all we know when we start, right? I have the feeling you changed. You're just a hardworking. There's not much more of the image building around.
No, at the moment, none at all.
No.
No, I'm...
So we're talking to David Bowie instead of talking to the people, the
roles
you play?
Yes, instead of characters, yeah.
Right.
Well, when I had the characters... Oh, can I take this off?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, no, I have to lose that then. Doesn't matter.
After the first role.
I'll just take off one half. Right. I was a character when I performed the other albums.
Right.
Aladdin Sane, Ziggy Stardust, stuff like that. And I carried the character through into interviews, into newspapers, on stage, off stage. Whenever there was media around,
right.
I had to keep those characters concrete because it was important, because the fabric of my work is using my body, my personality, as well as my songs and stage performance. The idea was to rather like a canvas.
Mm-hmm.
But now I've finished with those particular situations, the hardware of science fiction in the beginning, the rockets and the moon and the aliens and whatever. And then there was the period where I was relating to technology upon society, as in the Diamond Dogs, through to just before the Station to Station period, ending up with a Plastic Soul character for the young Americans. Then Station to Station was a plea to get back to Europe. I mean, had it in America, I was going crazy. So I came back to Europe and decided that I needed to discover for myself a new form of musical language before I continued writing anymore. So the last two albums, Low and Heroes, aren't so much situations, but a process of discovery, searching for a new language, artistic language, so that I can go further.
Right.
And that's what Eno and myself and Frick have been up to, really.
Okay. That's the end of the role. You can take off your...
I can take it off completely now, can I? En masse? No. It's impossible to care en masse. But the contact I have with a few that get to see me is very good. And I take them as people, as individuals.
I remember one lyric, all the nobody people, all the somebody people.
Yes.
I need them.
Yes. Yes. Well, that character definitely did, because the world was exploding.
So that was the character. That was
definitely a character. That was Ziggy Stardust.
Right.
And he was the archetype, needing people, rock star.
Right. Now, to come back to that, the new album, the music to me sounds really a little bit, I hope that's the right English word, alienated. So I'm very surprised.
Alienated from what?
From. Oh, okay, from my world.
From your world.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. Right. Can you understand that, or is that?
Yes, I can, because it's new language. Would you like to know the process of writing?
Yeah.
That may help.
Right. Yeah,
help
sure.
Understand. Side two especially. Side one is a slightly different form of writing. But Brian and I would, that's Brian Eno, would attempt to write in as many different processes and fashions as we could. The aim to be to discover this so-called language, artistic language. And one of the processes that we used was that Brian would think of a statement that he wanted to make musically, and I would think of a statement that I wanted to make musically, and neither of us would tell each other what our respective statements were. And we would come up with one foundational musical theme. That would be the foundation, and maybe a chord sequence or a number of bars that would be in one key and a number of bars in another key, and that was our only foundation. Then we both go away and write about our individual statements, come back and both put down our recordings of what we were doing, and then listen back to it. And it was phenomenal that we got a third piece of information out of it. Mm-hmm. A piece of information that neither Brian and I knew was going to happen.
No.
So the album for us, all the time, when we finish it, it's a surprise. A very sometimes very pleasant, sometimes...
You put them together and that's it? There's no...
Oh, and then we'll work on those particular pieces of information, those two will sub. But we very rarely tell each other what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. How long do you think you can go on writing in this way?
Well, that's just one way.
Yes.
I mean, that was one. That's what I mean. The process has changed on just about every track. That's why it's such a great variety of musical information on the album.
Mm-hmm.
Because the process was rarely the same for any two tracks.
Isn't it surprising that in these days of young kids buying or being into punk and new wave and all that stuff that they buy your album and this kind of music in these amounts.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's...
you're what
surprised.
Can I say?
No, you're surprised too. I mean,
I'm delighted. But I'm very presumptuous because I'm also very biased. I consider that what we're doing is also part of a new wave or a mm-hmm. new old wave.
You think the sale of the album, for instance, has still a lot to do with the hype around you?
I've not seen any hype.
No?
No. If it comes, it comes from you guys. I'm very happy. Thanks very much.
Right. Does punk appeal to you?
I haven't heard punk. I've seen a lot of punk.
Mm-hmm.
I've not heard the rock yet. I see a category. I see... there's the abstract art of the mid-60s. Yes, what is it? That's better. He's in the other room. The conceptual art of the 60s that was something very akin to punk rock as a movement, I think, in as much that it wasn't experienced, it was theorized about.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that at the moment with punk, I think that a category has been created by the media, as always, and it's still a vacuum. There's nothing filling it yet, apart from two or three bands, maybe. As far as the bands concerned, the ones that I've seen, I think there's an awful lot of enthusiasm among them, which I think is terrific. But they're still sort of adopting a pose and trying to think of something dangerous to say. But they haven't actually got anything yet. Somebody will, I suppose.
You discover any talent already?
Devo. Devo, are you a man?
Yeah, Devo.
Devo, an American band.
Never heard of
it. No, we won't. They haven't been recorded yet. They're extraordinary.
Are you going to work with...
Yes, I'm going to produce them. I'm very excited about them.
Now we get to Iggy Pop. Some people say it's pre-punker. It has a new wave feeling already in the beginning of the 70s when he was with the Stooges.
I've got to surprise you. Come on, Jim, come out. Yeah, go on.
He's giving himself completely when he's performing.
Yes,
he's scratching, doing everything.
Very physically extravagant in his performance.
You think that's good for an artist? Could you do it yourself, for instance?
It's not my place to have an opinion on that, on what Jim does. I admire Jim very much. I've always liked what he did, and I wanted to be involved because I didn't think that people took him, firstly, seriously enough, or didn't take him at all, and which. I've always had a penchant for the so-called musical underdog. And the hardest part about working with Jim was getting other people in the music industry to take what he was doing seriously. I mean, that was really hard. And now, of course, it's happening. But it's not my place to judge his performance, because it's his performance and his music that attracted me to in the first place.
Have you got a name that big as David Bowie? Isn't it very easy for to be a very big push on somebody's
product? I think that's a pretty naive sort of attitude, don't you think? If it wasn't good, it wouldn't sell. I mean, if Jimmy was no good on stage, people wouldn't go and they wouldn't get excited. If they did go, they wouldn't go again. They've been and they're going again. Because he is very exciting on stage, and musically, I mean, as it is with all product like that that's marketed through the media, if the first one sells, it doesn't necessarily mean that anything else is going to sell. But they buy Jimmy's records because his music is bloody good.
You think you're powerful?
You're power crazy, aren't you?
Yeah, people write about you.
Well, Lord, no. No, I don't see what I do in terms of power. I think I'm a fairly good social observer, and I think that I encapsulate areas maybe every year or so. I try and stamp that down somewhere, what that year is all about, rather than what it was all about or what it's going to be. It's very much, you know, that trying to capture the quintessence of that year is, and so it's an active performance all the way through the year, because one's dealing with 365 days, so I may seem very active. Indeed I am.
Yeah, I can see that. You were talking about a trilogy of records.
Yes.
Is there still one to come in the series?
Right. Yes. Yeah.
Are you working on it already?
Yes. Also, I'm going to America in a few weeks, and I'm working on Robert Fripp's album. He's asked me to do some work with him in New York.
Yeah, I think we stop this as well, right? Okay, I want to talk a little bit about show business in general.
Oh, tell me about it.
Yeah, right. Tell us about it.
You tell me.
Have you had the feeling that you have been lived in the last few years? I mean... Being lived by other people, by record companies, by managers, by...
That's an extraordinary question. Yes, it's very appropriate at the moment. Dare I say anything about that?
Sure.
About the chap in...
Yes.
Can I?
But wait, he'll say it, because he's going to say something that we want, and then it's... You can cut it off.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go on. Yeah, I am sort of lived over there a bit in that... You know, there's some crazies over there that...
But in the whole career...
I know what you mean. Am I being soaked? No. From the last 2 years, I mean, I've sorted my own life out very much. Mm-hmm. And I don't... I'm not involved in show business at all, in any way, shape or form. Right. The life that I lead is incredibly conservative. Adventurous, because I travel an awful lot. Mm-hmm. I don't live anywhere. I don't have any houses anywhere. Never have. Never will have, as far as I can see.
The image you have has got almost nothing to do with your real life, right? I mean, the image you have for the magazines and...
It depends which image you're talking about. I've seen so many, because of course there will be so many. It's like looking at an actor's films and taking clippings from the films and saying, here he is.
Right.
You know, and it's,
well, that's where you're different from most rock stars.
Yeah, well, I'm not a rock star, you see. You've just said it. I'm not in rock and roll.
Good, that's nice.
I'm very definitely thirsty.
All right, David. Maybe this is the past for you, but I'd like to talk about your experiences in show business, about...
Well, there was this girl,
Yeah, carry on. what experiences were you...
Concerts for 10,000 people, record companies running behind you, hype, images...
You're determined to put me in this...
No, you've been in
dynamic,
there.
Dynamic...
You've been in there, right?
Yes, I have been in there, and I tell you, it's sticky stuff. It's like the trenches. It's like going out on some kind of maneuver, actually, the whole process. It's this sort of, in a rock thing on a tour, there's sergeant majors, and then there's corporals, and everybody says, right, pack! Move on, and you set up tents that they're called Hiltons, and you know, Holiday Inns. I hate the process. I think it's loathsome.
It was originally meant to be informal rock and roll, and then it turns into a big company kind of thing. Right?
Enormous arena. Yeah, it can do that.
Mm-hmm. Same goes for the record industry. Is that?
My dealings with all those people are on a very personal basis now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't have any management.
But that's not any of that. In the past,
I mean, I never knew what was going on. I was oblivious to everything that was happening because those responsibilities, David, have been taken away from you, David, so that you have the freedom to write, David.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I wrote, and they made money.
Now there's no management. So who keeps the books?
Me and somebody else.
Right. Interviews.
Mm.
You do a lot of them?
No, this is the first time I've done this kind of interview for an album. And I must be quite honest, the reason I'm doing it is because I want to give the album every chance that it can get. Right. Because it is... I didn't know it was going to go gold in 3 days, or I wouldn't have bothered. I'm being very honest. I mean, that's why I'm here, to do that. I didn't expect it to be received so enthusiastically.
Right.
I'm flabbergasted.
Now, new cities and new journalists and new questions and people trying to peep a little bit into...
Not new questions most of the time.
Right, okay. You have a new question for me?
Well, no, I tend to... I sort of just react by trying to blow the interview.
Right.
And that often produces some further questions.
Right. But I was just wondering, but you obviously do this only once a year or something. I was just wondering if you didn't get real sick of interviews, cameras.
Well, it's the idea of becoming a machine. I mean, if one is asked during the course of a day the same question about 10 times, if it's 10 different people, one's very tempted to make up new answers. Because I get very bored very quickly. And I feel a bit like a parrot by about the fifth interview.
Right, then...
And something very sort of sterile and sort of rather mouldy by about the 10th interview.
Do people hit you with remarks you've made 10 years ago or 5 years ago?
Oh, quite often, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But I used to do a dreadful thing in the past, which I've stopped doing now. I would read something that I never said in a paper and adopt that point of view to see what reaction it would get and see if we get a third reaction from that.
Right.
So I had a lot of fun sort of delving into other people's ideas of what I am and adopting their idea for a bit.
Sometimes it went a little bit out of hand, you know.
Oh, but of course, but I work on dangerous ground. I mean, that's why
when people start talking about you as being fascist and all
yes,
that,
I know, it's some atrocious things happen.
Yeah, but that's all nonsense, let's say that.
I'm totally apolitical.
Right.
Absolutely, I have no... It's not my position for the kind of artist that I am, which is a person who tries to capture the rate of change.
Mm-hmm.
For me to adopt any given policy or stance politically, right. Mm-hmm. Because my job is as an observer of what is happening. And any statements that I made in that direction were a general reaction and a theatrical observation of what I could see happening in England.
Right. And it hasn't happened yet, but...
No, it hasn't, thank God.
No, right.
But what do? You ridicule it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first thing you do.
Right.
I was amazed that nobody had noticed that it was happening. And it seems to have come to much more attention since I said that.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, we were talking about power, and you say we were so hung up on
power. No, that's not power. That's social observation.
Yeah, well...
Don't mind me saying so.
No, that's not power, but...
Media has the power.
Right.
I have maybe the...
But that's the media always stick to you.
I have the observation... Oh, yes, well, that's their combination and their entanglement of what is and what isn't and what they would have be that provides the people with... some fairly distorted informational viewpoints.
I'll just come back to this for one second.
Yeah.
I mean, you can deny it or not, but the thing that 100,000 of kids are treating you as a hero, reading every line you say...
I don't think so. You see, I think that's a generalization. A kid doesn't go out and live his life around me. He goes out and he might buy my records when they
like
come
you,
out. He may adopt my hairstyle, but it does very much end there, you know. I mean, I've never seen with any rock idol kids that have been so totally intoxicated by the thing that they live out that thing as their myth. I think you're carrying it a bit far. It doesn't really work like that. And don't tell people it works like that, because it's not that way.
I want to hear that from you. It's
well, you just heard it.
Just must be dazzling to see people direct their life towards what you do or something.
I don't think that's at all the case. I think the average rock listener gleans information from records and stage performances of an ethereal nature. One can't put one's finger on what that information is, but that's why people go to rock concerts. And I enjoy the process of giving and receiving information. Which is what I find happens.
Now, one of the things you've talked about a lot is that people need a leader, right? And that goes for rock and roll also. People definitely searching for musicians that they can...
And the best leader they can possibly have is the one that looks back at them from the mirror.
Right.
So they have to understand that mirror very well. And then that person can lead them.
You think you can do that by relativating the whole thing, for instance?
I don't know. Look, mate, I'm not a psychiatrist.
That's a good ending. Yeah, no, okay.
You said people are not directing after you. I mean, but...
Yeah.
Do you think you have any... might have a little influence on their thinking? Because they listen to your records, went to your shows and...
The influence is only acceptable if it's taken by that person on his own initiative. No, not influence in the way that I believe that you mean. Correct me if I'm wrong, but do you mean insidious influence, a kind of a creeping influence that makes people unconsciously do things?
Just because?
Because I seem to be saying that. Mm-hmm. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
No. No, because there is far too many images for people to be that directly influenced by one given thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm trying to do with the new music, is find a new language which doesn't have that kind of image influence.
You think people will understand that language that you are?
It doesn't. Well, I think they do, yes. Because I think people, especially in a city context, think in fragments.
Yeah.
Opposed to a country person who thinks far more in a linear form. I mean, all this is very old hat, sort of beatnik philosophy, but it's they think far more in linear form, sentences, entire sentences. A farmer will think, I see a cow in the field, it gives me milk. We're milk crazy today. It gives me milk. But a city person will see a milk advert in the street and be thinking, milk, what are we going to have for dinner? Boy getting knocked down by a bus, crashed against wall, that kind of... So he's thinking in terms of maybe 1,000 different images at any given time. He doesn't know he's thinking any differently to the way his forefathers thought. And the language that Brian and I are sort of producing is a language that can relate to that way of thinking.
Final question for the film.
Yeah.
Isn't it strange that in a few years' time you will be performing for audiences that are about the age of your own kid, for instance?
Is that what I'm going to be doing? Good Lord.
That's what you're going to be doing. I mean, the kids that gave you the book yesterday who go to your show are about 7, 8 years old.
That was extraordinary as well. I've never seen anybody that young before come to a show. I mean, 7 or 8 is strange.
Will you ever play in Las Vegas?
Oh, Lord. Oh, Las Vegas. No, I can't see that coming. That's not on the immediate horizon by any means.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you. Las Vegas.
Ever since Elvis died, I just ask everyone to... You want to play in Las Vegas? Jigga didn't want to do it.
I've never even been there, actually. It's the one city in America. I've never been there, have I, Barbara? Las Vegas? Never, I haven't been there.
It's worth going there. It's nice.
Don't go there.
Well, it must be an interesting phenomenon to see.
Phenomenon.
Yeah, I would, for that reason, it would be.